Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. So before you start listening to this episode, we want you to understand that there's a trigger warning for this, because Kate will be talking in depth about her suicide attempt in middle school and talking about the factors that led to that. So we really want just to make sure that people realize that there is always help available. We know that sometimes Kate will talk very clearly about the fact that there were times in her life where she felt like ending her life was the only way to be relieved of what she was going through. And we understand that she is not the only one who is living with that. The good news is the Federal Communications Commission a year ago created a simple, free, 24-hour confidential number. There, it's intended to kind of parallel the 911 concept. That if you need help, please remember that you matter to someone, and you can always, 24 hours a day, call the number 988, and there will be a help available. A mental health professional is there to help you 24 hours a day. Please don't give up before reaching out for help. We do understand that sometimes it can seem like there would be relief in that, but there is hope for you beyond that. So thank you very much for listening. And please also just notice the people around you, and remember that those around you might need more support than it readily appears. And please share this number with them as well.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And we're back.
We're back. Wow. What a day it's been.
It has been. Yeah. Today, we sat down to record and had everything all ready to go, and got a phone call that, we got a phone call that my father's auto shop was on fire. So that kind of took a minute to process. It turns out we're not really sure what happened. Sounds like maybe it was a trailer or an RV in the back of the shop that was actually on fire, but it was a pretty big fire, and not really sure to what extent the building was or was not involved. Kind of a like, sort of stopped us in our tracks a bit.
Yeah, it's a whole cascade of reactions that has to be worked through.
Right. Like, oh my God. And just,
Just that.
So
we're just commenting on that, so everybody understands the space we're in before we even start recording what is going to be a pretty difficult episode anyway.
Yeah.
So, this is the trigger warning. So you want to talk about what our episode is about today?
So September is National Suicide Prevention Month, and it's September 22nd, and we're just now recording this because, I don't know, it's taken a minute to kind of, like, we've been wanting to acknowledge the month and what, you know, it means for so many, but also, and it's just tough to talk about. So, you know, it's taken us this long to kind of get our head around what we want to say about it. But we do want to talk about it. However, yes, it comes with a trigger warning, because there are so many people who I think, you know, have statistics tell us that struggle with, have struggled with suicidal thoughts, who struggle with depression, anxiety. So we, as always, try to make our episodes as like victim-centered and friendly as we can. And not talk about things in too much or too great of detail that would be a trigger. But at the same time, of course, anytime we talk about a heavy topic like this, we have to warn people that, you know, if that's something that could potentially trigger you, please take caution in listening. So
I think today's going to be a little extra heavy, right? I don't think there's a way to lighten up the topic of suicide prevention.
Yeah, no.
And I guess I want to comment on the fact that there is, I don't know, there's a world of difference between thinking, gee, it would be kind of okay if I didn't have to live like this anymore, and I actively want to be dead. And then I actively want to kill myself. And then I actively have a plan. And I actively have access to a plan. And there's a, so I guess I don't want caregivers or support people jumping off any cliffs. If you have someone in your world who's saying like, this is so hard, I don't want to live like this anymore, that doesn't necessarily mean that person needs to be hospitalized. Maybe they do. And I'm not suggesting that anybody makes that decision on their own. There are hotlines, there are hospital ERs, there are places to go for that. But please know that there is a scale, if you will, of concern that we need to be conscious of. But what we do know is that a UCLA article cited in February of 2023 that suicide is the second leading cause of death in people ages 15 to 24, which is probably shocking to some. We would think drug addiction or car accidents or the things we would, but no, suicide is the second leading cause of death. And in the United States, 20% of high school students report serious thoughts of suicide and 9% report having made an attempt.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot of young people who are actively struggling. We're not going to talk today about all my thoughts about why that is. It just is. Beyond that, however, we also know that studies show that childhood sexual abuse is associated with suicidal ideation even after we control for the effects of other kinds of abuse, like neglect or physical abuse, which means that it is sexual abuse rather than neglect or physical abuse that is the primary trigger for suicidal thoughts. So if you put a bunch of people in a room who had been abused in various ways, those who are struggling the most are those who are reporting sexual abuse. We're going to just do the whole statistic thing right out the gate because I do think it's important for people to understand the enormity of what we're talking about. Another study showed that the risk of suicidal behavior, so we're not just talking about thoughts, but we're talking about action here, was 29% higher in people who have PTSD because of sexual abuse compared to people who have PTSD because of other things. So again, pointing back to sexual abuse being a leading trigger. Another study said that adolescent survivors of childhood sexual abuse have a suicide rate of 10 to 13 times the general population. We went looking for research about suicide rates in people surviving trafficking. And of course, the only statistics that we could find were from Southeast Asia. We'll report on that because that's all we could find. So an article published in the pediatrics version of the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2015 said that they did research that looked at 387 children and teens ages 10 to 17 receiving post-trafficking services in Cambodia, Thailand, and Vietnam. There are lots of reports of poor mental health, self-harm, and suicide, which was common among those kids who had been in either forced labor or sexual trafficking. I mean, that's kind of a duh.
Yeah.
Right? of course, mental health issues were common. 12% of those 387 kids from 10 to 17 reported, again, those kids are trafficked. 12% reported they had tried to harm or kill themselves in the month before the interview, while 15.8% reported having suicidal thoughts in the past month. A third were still afraid of their traffickers or their associates. Hmm. So, I mean, obviously we need to look more closely at the impact of trafficking and suicidal ideation or behavior in the United States. And I mean, that is the whole point of Mezzo, right?
Yeah.
As we need to be paying attention to that.
It's not just over there. It's not just in Southeast Asia.
Oh my word. It was so frustrating trying to find that information. And yep, there's not, again, not that I could find in recent times for sure. I mean, you might find an article from 1980, but we're not about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, in light of all of that and in light of September being, this, you know, to raise awareness, we wanted to talk about that and share that. And we also wanted to talk through, factors that contribute to that and also share a little bit about, what led up to my own suicide attempts throughout my life. So Going back, if you have been listening along with us, you will have heard our episode about my first escape attempt. If you haven't listened to that episode already, you can go back and check it out. I think it's called Escape Attempt Number One. It's sometime in the early stages of our podcast. But we talked about I had attempted suicide in seventh grade. I was 12. And that was the catalyst really for me then disclosing that I was being sexually abused by my father to a school teacher, and just that how that all unfolded. You know, I had written a note to a friend, you know, suggesting that I was going to attempt suicide. The teacher saw the note. She saw marks around my neck. So lots to talk about there, which we're not going to really go back and cover right now. But if you haven't listened to that episode, it is Escape Attempt Number One, and you can go listen to that. But today we want to talk more about what led up to that decision. And I honestly hate to call it a decision because, yeah, like I understand that it, you know, suicide is sometimes
a choice,
sure. But in the context of this and of, you know, complex, PTSD, it's always kind of like, is it a choice? Like, I mean, yes, technically, but, when there's so much surrounding it and it's truly an act of desperation, like, I don't know, can we call it a decision? Like,
that's tough. Well, and how conscious is the decision when you're 12 years old? How we've talked before about the reality of teen brains, tween brains, that they're not really capable of really considering all of the implications of it. How much is it actually a choice? But even in your situation, yeah. I mean, it had been imprinted upon you what the outcome could be for you, and yet you were so stuck that it seemed like the only way.
Yeah. So, yeah, what led up to that? As I, you know, got older, I was also physically bigger. So we said this before, but more intense abuse was able to happen. I could withstand more. I had been, you know, physically conditioned to withstand more. When I was in the fifth grade, my brother started attending Christian Central Academy. It's a private Christian school locally. And it was super expensive. My parents couldn't afford it. I mean, my father's business was still drowning from the outside. People knew that they had filed bankruptcy, had been, you know, all kinds of different financial struggles and all of that. And yet, you know, here we are sending their son to a school that currently, CCA costs $12,000 a year. I'm sure it was less back then because we're going back to late 90s at this point. But I mean, still public school or private school is private school.
Not free. Right. It wasn't free for sure.
Yeah. My mother did start working part time, very, very part time at Sylvan Learning Center. But it was not really enough to cover that. And plus, again, the business was still underwater at this point. So I remember my dad telling me that I had to do more to help pay for this. It was going to be expensive. It was something that they felt like they had to do. And so more abuse and trafficking was added to the things that were already happening to keep the business afloat. People were able to pay for worse things. Like I said, I was bigger, I was older, I could withstand more. And so the level of
trauma
was, you know, even more so than it had been. And it gradually just kept getting worse. I kept feeling like more boundaries were being pressed and more concerning medical issues and walking away from things really, really badly hurt. My father also got really much less selective in who, when I was younger, it was church people, it was people close to him, it was friends of his, friends of my grandfather's, friends of my uncle, people within the family. And then this kind of opened it up to more, you know, there was work people, there was still church people, there were, you know, more distant friends, extended friends, some of the people I didn't even know. So yeah, it opened it up really to not anyone and everyone, but definitely way, way less selective about who was able to participate in this. So because of all of that, I started losing control of my boxes. Keeping the bright world and the dark world separate was getting harder and harder. I was also like in those horrendous years of like, I mean, my God, 11, 12, 13, like Jesus, like who wants that, you know? So I'm, you know, emotions and all the hormones and all the things contributed, I'm sure too, but I felt like I was slipping. I was pushing back more. Like I was getting angry about things and I was reacting to things in ways that I knew that I couldn't. I knew that it was not okay that I was saying no or that I was angry, but because that wasn't accepted in the dark world. So in the bright world, then I was kind of not off the rails, but
more reactive than you had been prior.
Yes. Yeah. It was just getting really hard to keep everything separate and tidy and perfect and looking neat and nice from the outside. So everywhere I turned, I was in trouble because I was in trouble at school because I didn't get my whatever assigned, or I was in trouble because I didn't bring home my report card or my report card wasn't perfect. And so then I was in trouble at home, or I was, you know, no matter where I turned, I was in trouble. I was reactive. I was emotional. I was being hurt really, really badly. I just remember there was no out. There was no, literally nowhere to turn. The level of stuckness and the intensity of that feeling, like I don't even know how to put it into better words. It just was stuck.
We're not even really talking about the amount of brainwashing that went into, we're not going to get into that today, but it's important, I think, mention that you were stuck as a result of not having supports in the bright world and the dark world being such a disaster. And this had been now going on for enough years that the brainwashing was pretty intense.
Yeah.
So you didn't see a way out in the bright world.
No, yeah, absolutely not. There was never a thought of I could tell or I could get help. I ended up telling and disclosing because I wrote a note to a friend and said that I was considering attempting suicide, and a teacher intercepted that note and then started to ask questions. So it's not even like I went to school seeking that, you know, that potential help. It just happened. It was kind of forced upon me, for lack of a better explanation. But I didn't have any thought of like, well, if I could just tell someone or if I could just explain what was going on, that wasn't even in my awareness. I don't remember making a decision about ending my life. I only really remember planning for it, and I don't even really remember planning that much for it. I was 12, so this was pre-internet. Really, like maybe we had dial up, but I certainly did not have access to it, which super, super dates me, but that's okay. Okay, I have to lighten the mood for a sec because otherwise I'll drown. We saw an AFV. Do you guys watch AFV?
You know, I hate.
Oh, I know
that.
You do. Oh my
it
God.
It breaks my heart. It makes me so cringy. Sad.
I gotta tell you, the falling ones are my favorite.
Oh, I
like
hate
when they
those.
Slide on the ice.
Ah, that's so. Ah, I can't.
It's so cringy, but it's so good. No, but there was this like little 4-year-old girl, and she was dressed up as like an old person, and she was like imitating an old person. And her mom, she was like, "Oh, my back hurts." And her mom was like, "How old are you?" And she's like, 33. It's like, I feel that though. Like, I feel that deeply. mm-hmm. Anyways, sorry. That's how
that
I
was a good break.
My operating. Yeah, I have to,
gotta,
you know,
do it.
Humor. But yes, so no internet. There was not really like, I wasn't Googling like how to, you know, how to do this. I there was no Google. So the only ways that I could really conceive of ending my life were things that had already been done to me by my abusers that made me feel like I was slipping into death. Most of the things that I could think about that did that to me, I couldn't do to myself. I didn't feel like I could drown myself at home. I didn't really know how to do some of the things that they had said. So the only thing that I could come up with was there were times when they would tie something around my neck and I would black out and wake up somewhere else. And so that seemed like a viable option, I guess. I also have this weird memory. I remember watching Walker, Texas Ranger. I don't know if you remember that show.
I do remember that show.
I'm super dating myself. Yeah. at my grandparents' house. And in the episode, a man hung himself. And I remember, like, I was, like, panicky about that episode. Like, I couldn't, like, I still have, like, weird feelings about it, like, heebie-jeebies, and just, like, I remember that kind of being the thing, like, yeah, that works, like, that does work. So, it, yeah.
Okay, I think we just have to pause there, because that's a lot for people to have just heard.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not because it's too much, don't misunderstand. It's what people need to hear and understand what it is that we're fighting for here. We're fighting for the kids who they feel that desperate.
Yeah.
So, please, we have to let that sit and understand what it takes for a kid, for a person of any age, really, to come to a place of saying, I don't really know how to do this. I just know I sure as hell need to find out how.
Yeah.
Because I can't do this anymore.
Well, I think it's also, and this is a kind of a tangent that, you know, we'll bring it back around, but people ask us all the time, like, why mezzo? And the reality is, like, I think it's easy for people listening to the podcast to think that this is, one off. Like, isn't that so terrible that that happened to that one girl? But it's not. Like, it's so much more prevalent. And it's, you know, again, this is a soapbox moment, and I'm not going to get on the soapbox and talk all about mezzo, but it is ridiculously prevalent. You know, I was thinking through, I was talking to somebody who their organization supports a lot of youth organizations, and thinking through, like, you know, why support mezzo? And it's like, because a lot of the there are potentially kids in these other youth programs that your organization supports that this could be happening to or is happening to, right? On some level, right? Whether or not, you know, some level of this going on. So it's way more prevalent than my story. And I'm not unique in these feelings of being stuck and of having no out and of having this be like, I don't know what else to do. And, you know, it's not just me.
42% of trafficking survivors report that their trafficking began in their family.
Yeah. So I attempted to commit suicide, to end my life that way, and it didn't work because I was 12, and, like, you know, even what you see on Walker, Texas Ranger is not, like, I don't know, there's more that goes into that physics wise I guess, and it didn't work. So I never really had that, like, aha moment. I know that not everybody does, but that moment of feeling like it didn't work, and I'm so glad it didn't, because I realize now that I want to stay, and I, you know, I'm so glad that I survived and that I, you know, whatever. I didn't have that moment. I had, I felt even worse. I felt really angry that I couldn't even do that right. I couldn't even take my own life correctly. I was in trouble for trying to do that. I felt, you know, and then the whole disclosure at school ensued and unfolded. And I was just really, I felt even more stuck and hopeless than before I had even tried.
I know that this is not the emphasis of this episode, but I don't want to skim past that too quickly, that you were already desperate enough to end your life. And then things got infinitely worse after that. Not better.
Yeah. You can't have residual evidence of an attempt like that and have people still want to pay money for you. So you might want to cut that.
Nope, that's the truth.
So each time, I attempted suicide a few times throughout my life. Each attempt was really similar in terms of what led up to it. Each time I was in the middle of something even more unbearable than my already unbearable situation. you know, it was never a choice that I wanted. I think this is kind of like circling back to that, like, was it a decision? So much so that with being in the church and with some of the religious, you know, elements to the abuse, I was told over and over that I would 110% go straight to hell if I ever completed suicide. So each attempt that I made was really choosing the reality of what I was taught hell to be over the hell that I was actually living in. So there wasn't even like a sense of I'm going to end my life and there's going to be relief. It was just like, I can't do this anymore. I might as well try that.
And let's keep in mind that the hell that was described to you was not some watered down version.
Oh God, no. Mm-mm. No, anybody listening who's grown up in any type of church situation, I think can, yeah.
Yeah, but some churches sort of soft pedal that, but your experience with your family members, this was not a soft pedal version of what hell would be.
Yeah.
And no. Still that was better than what you were living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was well aware of the fire. Anyways, there was no feeling that this could be relief. It really was just a choosing of the lesser of two evils. So again, that's why I say, like, was it a decision? I don't know. Like, yes, in theory and technically, but I don't know.
But I make a decision when I drive somewhere, even when I'm not really paying attention to where I'm going, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Since we're doing, like, break up the intensity some. Right before we started, we were like, wow, this has been a day. Let's go get ice cream. Okay. But I'm trying not to have to go on diabetes medication. So going to get ice cream would not be a very good thing. But could I possibly have done that without, like, it would have been a decision to go get ice cream. But to what extent would I?
Are you saying really that ice cream would have been forced upon you?
It might have been.
By me.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. I just might need ice cream to get through this day. I don't know.
We found a different way. It's fine.
Yes, we did.
Oh my God.
I know. That's such a terrible comparison, but I think everybody understands what we're trying to say.
Yeah.
You can make a decision you can choose to put food in your mouth without it being a fully thought out thing, but it's obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, I guess we say all of this again to come full circle and raise awareness around this. Like we said, September is National Suicide Prevention Month. There's a lot of really amazing efforts out there right now that are geared towards really ending the stigma of it, right? People kind of shy away from it. They don't want to talk about it. It's really uncomfortable. Well, welcome to our podcast. It's where we talk about all the things that nobody wants to talk about.
Yep. We're all about that.
But yeah, no, it's true. You know, there's so much surrounding it that's just like, oh yeah, I don't, like, nobody wants to say that word. Nobody wants to acknowledge it. And yet it's something that, especially trauma survivors, as we talked about in the beginning with all of the statistics, really face and deal with. And it's definitely not, I think, so this is also probably some of my, like, past, like, whatever, but you know, there's like that mentality too, that someone's saying that or threatening that for, like, attention, right? Yeah. And so just kind of highlighting that too, that, like, nope, that's not it. That's not.
And if there is a desire for someone to notice you that is at all playing out in that, then we have to ask the next question is, why does this person, this child, feel the need to use that as a way of getting someone to see and hear them?
Right.
If everything is fine in their world, they should not be feeling the need to do that, right, to see, right, and hear them. So I don't know. It just makes me think about the fact that sometimes we think about mental health issues as, you know, it's just genetics or it's neurochemical or it's just, like, I don't know, it just landed on me. It just happened to me. And yes, there are absolutely some times when somebody's mental health issues are the result purely of a neurochemical or a genetic factor. But mostly in my experience, there is a neurochemical or genetic maybe predisposition that either blooms into something that is a problem or doesn't based on life experiences. Mm. And we have to stop just saying, oh, well, you know, that person has mental health issues. Okay, but are we wondering, like, what might be going on that's causing that? And, you know, if a child is really drowning, we have to ask ourselves what's needed here in order to help this child, and how do we help that child get what they need, whatever that is, mm-hmm. not just say, oh, it's mental health issues.
Yeah. I feel like that's such an easy way to like, just like, it's not my problem because it's a mental health issue.
Right.
But the reality is that like when you're dealing with a kid, it is your problem. If they mm-hmm. cross your path, it's your problem.
Yes.
And you should want it to be if you are a decent human being.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, that's our episode. We have an episode coming hopefully next week, or early of the following week, with the sister of a young woman that I grew up with who did complete suicide back in January. Oh, Silas just almost knocked my computer on the floor.
That's because he's cuddling, like literally.
Look at my like reflexes.
Very nice.
Like a cat.
That's a pretty good place to end.
Yeah.
Like a cat. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, again, just high leveling what happens after that does take place and the fallout from that, and you know, telling this young woman's story and honoring her life, we thought was important. So stay tuned for that. As always, thank you for listening. And yeah, that's all I got.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.